Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 26th of January 2014. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James, Nick from Partially Obstructed View, and Web Cowgirl. We're now going to talk about the Samuel Beckett trilogy, Not I, Foot Falls, and Rockabye. This has had a sellout show at the Royal Court, and is now moving into the Duchess Theatre. The three small plays by Samuel Beckett are entirely performed by Lisa Dwan. Perhaps the most thrilling one is the first, Not I, which is famously a single mouth, 8 foot above the stage, exhibiting what has been described as logorrhea. I don't really like using the word, but this sort of flow of words. And it is something I really like about Samuel Beckett, when you get that kind of chanting flow of words where you can't quite catch all the meaning, you just catch fragments of the meaning. And perhaps that's not what I'm supposed to like about Samuel Beckett, but it is something I like a lot. This particular piece, Not I, is extremely well performed. I mean, it's very quickly performed by Lisa Dwan. One of the things that was most magical about it, I think, was that her mouth began to move, seemed to move around the stage. Now, she is almost bolted into position when she performs this play. But when she was actually performing, it's just because your eyes start to wander and they can't keep fixed on that one point in space for so long. I mean, it's only about 9 minutes. The second play really showed some of the skills of the lighting designer, James Farncombe, in this, because it's incredibly beautifully lit. Lisa Dwan appears on the stage as a young woman pacing around, waiting for her mother to die, and we have a conversation which is part recorded and part Lisa Dwan replying, possibly to her own voice. It didn't quite sound like it, but I think she seems to be able to do both kinds of voice, and nobody else is credited. This one was actually quite a disappointment when it came to it, because although it's beautifully lit and Lisa Dwan has very thin, almost skeletal features which suited the piece, it didn't. I really found it a little bit boring. I mean, this entire piece, all three plays, takes just an hour, and I actually found myself trying to look at my watch, you know, a couple of times during this particular one. The third one for me was a little bit spoiled because of a mechanical breakdown. Rockabye is a woman sitting silently for the most part in a rocking chair while her story is told by a narrator, and that works. That one worked a lot better, but the problem I had on the night I saw it was that the rocking chair didn't quite work properly. What did you think about this, Gareth?
I enjoyed the experience of seeing the three together very much, particularly as they kept the auditorium in darkness and indeed in silence in between the plays. So it kind of felt as if it had. That it was kind of meant to be together in a way, even though they were written about 7 years apart, I think, the three plays. And even though I'd seen all three individually, because I'd seen her do Not I at the Royal Court last year, and I'd seen the original production of Rockabye and a later, more controversial Footfalls with Fiona Shaw, where they varied from Beckett's instructions, I found the experience of seeing all three together actually added something for me. And I can't say I understand them, but I don't think you go and see plays like this for meaning, really. I mean, I think you just go for, I suppose, atmosphere, the kind of mystery of it. And I just found the whole thing kind of quite trance-like and mesmerising. And I actually thought the hour flew by, and I wasn't bored at all. I felt in the first play, when we went to see Not I on its own, I mean, the mouth was clearly static, and I thought bigger. But I really, it's probably an optical illusion, but I really felt from where we were sitting this time, which was perhaps a little bit slightly less central, I really felt the mouth was moving. And I also felt the mouth was smaller. We were no further from the stage, but it was a very different experience. And I think what I liked about it most was seeing the three together. And it is, you know, a tour de force for an actress. It is a tour de force for Lisa Dwan. So I was very glad I went to see it. And I think it's, you know, if you're interested in kind of non-literal theatre, I think it's probably worth going to the transfer at the Duchess in February.
We're now going to talk about The Past by John Donnelly. This is a production directed by John Tiffany, who has just had a success at the Royal Court with Let the Right One In.
And it stars Russell Tovey, Gary Carr, Lisa McGrillis, and Nico Mirallegro. Nick, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
This is in the Upstairs Theatre at the Royal Court, and it's set in a traverse staging, which is kind of a stylized hotel suite. And actually, over the course of the evening, it represents three different hotel suites. I would call it the story of the entire career of a Premiership footballer who actually ends up being pretty much sort of a superstar Premiership footballer who's played by Russell Tovey. So the opening is him and a friend he's kind of been friends with since they started as children, kind of training together and, you know, hoping to make the top team. And they're sort of at the start, they're on a, I think they're on a tour of Bulgaria. And it's kind of the make or break moment when, you know, the coaches are either going to spot one of them and say, you know, we're going to put you in the first team, or go, you know, you're nearly there but never quite going to make it. So that's kind of the starting point, and the relationship between them is it's quite crucial to what happens to Jason Russell Tovey's character in the next sort of 10 or 12 years, I think, is the rest of the duration. So we also see him in a scene at the sort of the height of his success, when he's a big star with a famous wife, but he's in a hotel room with a table dancer, and she's played by Lisa McGrillis. And I can't say too much about exactly what the situation is in that scene, because that's the revelations on that are one of the more interesting parts of the play. The final scene kind of reunites Jason and Addy, the other friend who's played by Gary Carr, and we see where their sort of different paths have taken them. And it's kind of been billed as a play about a closeted gay footballer, which it is, but it's also a story about how this sort of lifestyle affects people and what it sort of turns people into. It's certainly tragicomic, I would say. It's a very funny play, but it's got some real darkness to it. And the final scene, really, the character of Jason's been taken into a pretty dark place. And I think there's a really excellent performance from Russell Tovey in this. And I think it's actually a fantastic play. I mean, which actually came as a surprise to me, because I think, to be honest, once the publicity came out that this was 2.5 hours of Russell Tovey wandering around in his underwear, that was going to sell out immediately, and it did. So it's almost a surprise to find that there's a good play there as well. But it's a very, very impressive play, really. It's, like I say, it's very dark, but it's also very funny, and it's beautifully performed, and it's got a little bit of that sort of John Tiffany sort of flair to it, which is the sort of the movement stuff is it's sort of kept to the scene changes. But it's quite interesting how this sort of dancey movement style that you'd kind of associate with John Tiffany's productions, how it kind of translates into quite a sort of sporty, football-y, sort of macho movement sequence. So I think I found very little to criticise with it, but I may have been distracted by Russell Tovey in his underwear.
Certainly one of the things I found most remarkable about it was, I think it was in the final scene, Russell Tovey's, I know, always an actor I've quite liked, but I've always kind of seen him as sort of the likeable second lead. I know he's done things on his own, but he often plays a sort of likeable, slightly schlubby, I think is a word that I've heard used. So that kind of, you know, likeable, bit of a mess, but he's nice enough. And in this, you suddenly saw, and especially in the final scene, I suddenly saw sort of this leading man power. This, you know, you suddenly think, oh, right, yes, because he actually could do some real leading man work. And it may have been because I actually didn't like him that much at that point. But it was quite fascinating just to see, you know, sort of almost see an actor grow up and sort of mature into something really, really rather powerful and really rather interesting. Gareth, what did you think about this play?
I think I agree with everything really that's been said about it. I think it is a very, very good play. No, I think it's a fine play, and it's certainly the first contender for Play of the Year for me. What I liked about it most is there's a nice roundedness to its structure. I mean, I like the way that we start with this, you know, this relationship between two 17-year-olds sort of starting out in their careers on a very important night for them in more ways than one. And then we end kind of with them revisiting that 12 years later. When we learn about the, you know, what's happened to one of them, we've already learned about what's happened to the other. But I think it's a very clever structure because, you know, because the three scenes together do kind of give you a very satisfying kind of whole for a play, and it's a very substantial play that's got quite a lot to say, I think, and I think it says it in many ways unpredictably, which I liked. And certainly entertainingly, but it does also end very darkly. So I find it very satisfying indeed. I like the way Laura Hopkins, the designer, kind of took this Travis space and put kind of AstroTurf carpet, as it were, for the hotel rooms, and they just literally move the beds and a minibar to create the different hotel rooms. There's a big balcony at one side and a shower at the other, but it gives them this really quite big space and enables John Tiffany's production to be very physical and very energetic and quite edgy. So they're moving around the space a lot, and you really kind of, you know, your head's kind of darting around looking to where to look next in a way, really, because with Travis staging you're normally, it's like a tennis match, you're kind of, your head's going back and forth, and they put kind of floodlights in each corner high up, which they use occasionally, which kind of adds to this kind of football reference, really. So I liked the look of it, and I thought it was very well written play, and I do think it is a career defining moment for Russell Tovey, because, you know, he has to take this journey from 12 to 29. He has to take it from sort of laddish banter through to dark place, and become, you know, quite an obnoxious person you don't really like very much. And I thought that transition was really well played. But, you know, I think one of the other things about this production is there are four fine performances in it. Two of them are not as big as the others. Well, none of them are as big as Russell Tovey's role, but they are very pivotal and they are very, very well played. And I think for Nico Milallegro, this is a professional stage debut, and I think that, you know, that I think he's very, very good indeed. And Lisa McGillis does, you know, in her comparatively short scene, does pack a real punch in terms of performance. So I was also a bit surprised, because I wasn't expecting something of such substance, really. So, I mean, to be recommended, though, of course, there aren't any tickets left. But I have a feeling maybe we won't see a transfer of this. But it's the sort of thing that could easily be adapted for TV, I think. So it wouldn't surprise me to find this on TV at some point in time. Probably not a cinema release, because I think it's not cinematic enough, it's not big enough, but I think TV, because it would be good, I think, for more people to see the play.
I think it's quite interesting that it's a straight playwright writing a story that's kind of, like I say, it doesn't end up being entirely about the fact that the footballer's gay, but that was kind of the starting point for it. And I don't know to what extent that contributes to why it feels quite different, but it certainly does to me. It does feel like it looks at some of the issues in a very fresh way. And also, I agree about the energy of the production. I mean, there's not a lot of plays that you go into and get told that the first couple of rows may get wet. And this isn't Singing in the Rain. It's not the sheer amount of water. It's how energetically the water is flung around the stage that does actually land on half the audience.
They didn't actually warn us about that.
No.
We sat in the front row, and I can see why they would have warned us, but they're clearly doing that at every performance.
I knew going in, and I'd been told that one side was better than the other for kind of staying dry, but I think that's not really true. I think either side, but it's not like you're going to come out. I think people have exaggerated a bit. I think you know, to hear people speak, if you sat front row centre, you'd end up soaking from head to toe. That's not really the case. You might get splashed a little bit.
Well, I was centre and I didn't have one splash on me, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly. It's been exaggerated a little bit, but it's not quite SeaWorld. But yeah, I mean, and yeah, I think those other two performances do merit kind of mentioning, because, like I said, I feel like I can't say too much about Lisa McGillis' performance because it's so tied up in, I think, one of the more interesting revelations of the play. But suffice it to say, she does really hold her own opposite Russell Tovey, which in this particular play is saying something. And yeah, I mean, Nico Mirallegro has done a lot of telly, but this is apparently his professional stage debut, and he's really so engaging in quite a small role, but just got so much kind of life to his performance. So it's just so well put together. I did hear Russell Tovey on the radio yesterday saying that there's talk about more happening with this after the current sold out run, but in the way that there's always talk, so there's nothing set in stone. But I do hope that one way or another it gets more of a life, because I'd be happy to see it again, to be honest. And it's one of those ones that you do want to recommend to people and can't, because unless you're one of the people who get there the first split 30 seconds when they're on sale on a Monday morning, you're not going to get a ticket for it.
We're now going to talk about The World Goes Round, which is a, well, I suppose a review of the Songs of Candor and Ebb. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably call it a compilation show rather than a review, really. I always wonder why people call these things reviews. But yes, it is. It's Candor and Ebb's songs. It's taken from their first 10 shows, plus the film of New York, New York. And it's sort of staged. They've tried to make it into more of a show than a concert. These things are often more like concerts. But they've brought in five dancers who sort of animate it a bit, and they've gone to a bit of trouble on the look of the show, the design of the show. And I actually think it looked very good. I liked the kind of elegance and sophistication that they kind of created through that. And I liked that very much. Although one of our companions felt they should have spent the money on a band rather than on the dancing and the choreography, because it is actually just solo piano. And that didn't actually bother me, because it enabled them to be performed without amplification, which I think's always better. And I thought the pianist and musical director Michael Riley did a great job of playing the score just on a piano. It's directed by Kirk Jameson, who's done other work at the Union, but he is a designer come director, and I wonder whether the concentration on the look of the show is because of that pedigree, really. And Sam Spencer-Lane has done work at the Union, but lots of other work elsewhere, and I thought her choreography was really very good. I think there's an unevenness in the five performances, to be honest. The two men, Simon Green and Gareth Snook, and then three ladies, Lisa Stoke, Emma Francis, and Susan Fay, more mature musical theatre performers, I think, and that's not a bad thing, because I think they're very experienced. The one that stood out for me was Emma Francis, because of all of her songs, I thought were very good. I think some of the sort of matching of the songs to the singers didn't work for me, and some of the rearrangements, particularly the rearrangements for Cabaret, I didn't like very much. But the final number, which is a New York, New York that they do in five languages, I think it is, was, I thought, a very inspired idea, really. So, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity to hear songs you don't normally hear, even though, you know, we've seen more Candor and Ebb in the last 2 years, because we had the Scottsboro Boys just in the last part of last year. We had Curtains and Floor of the Red Menace, and the third one that now escapes me, the year before. Steel Pier, that's right, Steel Pier. So the Union, the Landor, and indeed the your old Rose and Crown of Walthamstow each give us a Candor and Ebb show in 2012. And the Young Vic brought it in Scottsboro Boys. So we've had those four. Three of them are from the latter period that this show doesn't cover, and there isn't a song, I don't think, from Flora anyway in the show, so I think there might be one song from Flora in the show. So actually it's a bunch of songs you don't get to hear, so that's a great opportunity to do it, and I think I was glad I went to see it. But it didn't wow me, as things often do at the Union Theatre. I thought it was an enjoyable, sort of solid, good evening, and I'm glad I went to see it. But I don't know. That's my view. I don't know about you, Webcargo.
By utter coincidence, the two of us were there, and I thought that was actually really very nice. So I got to have a good discussion about the show, but it has been, you know, tempered by actually talking about it. I went because I'm a big Candor and Ebb fan, and I was a fan before the Scottsboro Boys, and I was a fan before I moved here, on the basis of Chicago and Cabaret. And those two musicals were represented very well in this show, if you're bothered that you might be listening to music that you are entirely unfamiliar with. I thought that the format, to me, felt a little bit like they were sort of, you know, music videos, because every little song was sort of set up so that it was telling a story. class was, you know, it was just two women, you know, sitting there talking to each other, which is, you know, how the song is when it's performed. But For Coffee in a Cardboard Cup, which was really very cute, and from 70 Girls 70, which I'd never even heard of before this, the whole thing was done with people passing cups of coffee and holding porcelain cups and et cetera. So it was very lively and fun to watch. The Kiss of the Spider Woman song was done almost like it was a sort of SM fantasy or something. But despite how good the songs were, like you said, I wasn't really pulled in by the cast. They were, you know, competent, but it's difficult to fight back against songs that are in some cases so well known that your imprinted version of them is Liza Minnelli singing them. And I have to say, I agreed with what you had said earlier, which was that the male cast did seem weaker in terms of their interpretations overall than the women did. I really love Lisa Stocky doing Arthur in the Afternoon. And that one was really very much like a little story taking place in front of you with the singer talking about how lovely it is to have a handsome young man that she can go visit when she's got a little bit of spare time and how much that does for you. And they had one of the dancers on stage filling in the role of Arthur. And that was really, really a giggle. My thought was that rather than going with people who were known and competent, but maybe not as driven because of their sense of familiarity. But if they had actually taken a younger, edgier cast and put them in this, I think it might have really pumped up the level. I thought that the dancers were actually woefully underutilized, and they were singing at the very end. And I thought, well, if they could sing all along, a lot of these numbers really come to life when done with, you know, a bigger group, and it might have made a difference. But what I think I would have preferred for this is to have had, well, a greater diversity in ages at the very least in the cast that was performing, because this would have been a really good chance for them to say have added in two people, like a man and a woman, who were much, much younger in their careers. Because it's when you're young and struggling and poor that you're able to sing a song like Money and really get to the heart of what the song is about. I was very disconcerted by seeing it performed by people in evening dress, because that's actually very much to the contrary of the entire feeling of the song. What was disappointing to me, and I couldn't have realized when I walked in, was how much of the Cantor and Ebb oeuvre was going to be left out. Because I know there's a lot of things that I haven't seen, and I want to hear more of them and, you know, say be inspired to purchase cast recordings or what have you. But it turned out that this was done in, what, 91? So it is actually created as a show rather than just having it be somebody who just chose some music and put it together quite on their own for this thing at the Union Theater. I, of course, had not heard of the show And the World Goes Round, the musical review of Cantor and Ebb, so I didn't know that it had been done before. So I'm wondering if, for example, the Manhattan Transfer / Barbershop Quartet arrangement of Cabaret is actually as it was in the show, as it was written, because I found it a bit... I thought that they, you know, perhaps stripping Cabaret down to just pure music is a good way for us to think about it differently. But for me, it took the heart out of the song, and I would have really preferred them to have maybe done that for a less well-known song rather than that one, because there was lots of really, really beautiful music in this show, and focusing more on the music would have brought that out. So I think they made a very good effort in this, and for people who are fans of musical theater or fans of Cantor and Ebb, it's an enjoyable evening, but it didn't really have the heart that I was looking for, and I found it somewhat disappointing, but still, it was a enjoyable evening, and as all things at the Union Theater, it was very well priced, And if you're looking for something enjoyable and not too taxing, I think it probably would fill the bill. And God knows, the music in this show wiped out, I think, pretty much every new musical I saw last year. So if you want to hear really well-written songs and see how it ought to be done, then go to this and see the works of the master performed in front of you.
I think it'd be quite good if somebody did a second Kandrinov compilation show to take in the stuff after 1991, because that would enable them to put things in from, you know, things like the Scotch Boy and Curtains and Steel Pier and so on. Interestingly enough, Kiss the Spider Woman is actually a 1992 show, and the compilation is 1991, so that's a bit of a puzzle to me. I don't know whether they added that for the Union run, or whether it was in the original 1991 show. That was a bit of a puzzle to me.
No, it says they revised it in 92, and it said, the notes are that Kiss and Spider-Woman was actually a work in progress at that time. So apparently it was very cutting edge. You know what? I completely agree to you. It's time to do The World Goes Round and Round.
Yes. Yes. Good title. Good title. You can copyright that one.
All right. That's it. I'll write it. You produce it. We're set.
Okay.
Oh, yes. And then we have to do the all-aged women version of 70 Girls 70 as a follow-up once we've built up the appetite.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.